All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Glad you could join us today on this Monday morning. Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a nurse? If you look at just one day on the job, you'll find that they're often working overnight hours. They're caring for several patients at one time. They're skipping their lunches and staying on their feet for far beyond 8 hours a day. So when 15,000 Minnesota nurses went on strike for 3 days earlier this month, it highlighted a growing national problem. Nurses feeling overworked, burned out, and underpaid. Nurses have a deep passion for their work, but they're exhausted from being on the front lines of the pandemic. And even before COVID-19, nurses were dealing with sicker patients, new technologies, and increasing workplace demands. So today, I want to talk about the state of nursing. My two guests are going to tell us more about what it's like to be a nurse today, and they'll share the stress that they have seen and felt on the job and what needs to change to bring new nurses into the profession. And as we talk, I want to hear from you. We're taking your phone calls. Are you a nurse in Minnesota? What parts of your job do you love? What don't you like? And how has your job changed over the years? If you've gone to a hospital recently, how did a nurse impact your care? Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, the number is 651-227-6000. You can also call 800-242-2828. And you'll find me on Twitter. Leave me a message at Angela Davis, NPR. Let's bring in our two guests. We have with us on the line Laura Farrow. Now, Laura is the Dean of Nursing in the School of Health at St. Catherine University in St. Paul. Good morning to you, Laura.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Kelly Onnes with us. Kelly is a registered nurse in the Twin Cities. She works in the intensive care unit of an Allina Health Hospital. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, good morning. Happy to be here.
Well, so Kelly, I'll start with you. As I mentioned, you know, nurses across Minnesota went on a 3-day strike earlier this month. The strike is over for now, but there's still no contract agreement. So are there any new developments that you can share with us?
You know, unfortunately, there is not a lot of movement at the table. All of the hospitals who went on strike two weeks ago went back to the table last week, and we have not seen a lot of movement on our important issues around staffing and nurse retention.
Mm-hmm. Staffing and retention. So, Kelly, how do you describe why nurses like yourself walked off the job? What do you tell people who ask you?
Sure. So, you know, I think the pandemic brought to light a lot of different issues within the healthcare system, within our society, around access to healthcare. And it also really exacerbated an increasing problem in nursing that we as professionals are being asked to do more and more with fewer and fewer resources. And it really does impact the care and the quality of care that we're able to give our patients. It also impacts our mental health and ability to take care of ourselves on those coveted days off. And we just really feel like we're at a kind of a breaking point for the nursing profession and the direction that it's heading. And so to highlight these concerns and other problems that we have, taking care of Minnesota patients in Minnesota hospitals, we went on strike in an effort to reach a contract agreement.
Why did you go into nursing? Kelly, as you look back at the beginning of your career, what moved you to study nursing in school?
You know, I had always kind of gone back and forth between education and nursing. And the awesome thing about nursing is that you get to do both. So much of my job is about teaching patients and their loved ones about the their disease, the care that they're going to need, what's going on in their bodies and what we're doing to fix that. And I really just see nursing as kind of getting to have it all when it comes to being able to take care of people and also teach them about their health and ways to not need me again in the ICU. Mm-hmm. So,
and Laura, you know, as an educator, how do you describe the reasons so many nurses are leaving the field? Because, you know, we were seeing this nursing shortage. It started way before the pandemic began in 2020.
Absolutely. It started before that, and we've known for a long time that we are going to have very, very large vacancies. And what I want to highlight is that we also have those vacancies on the education standpoint, too. We are short of nursing faculty. Mm-hmm. There were 66,000 students that couldn't get in last year nationwide because we can't take any more students because we have no faculty. So that is a shortage as well, in addition to lack of clinical space because hospitals can't take many more students than what they're already offering placements for.
That's hard to hear. So there are people who are stepping up and say, yes, I want to study nursing. I want to pursue this as a career, but there are not enough trained nurses to teach them?
Correct. So we have about an 8 to 10% vacancy rate for faculty. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But again, it's a capped system where we can only take so many and are resourced for so many. Right. And we need those additional resources. But there's also issues with students coming into nursing as well. It's not a inexpensive thing to do. Right. You oftentimes can't work during the time you're training. So there's big financial barriers too.
So again, in your conversations, and I know you're, you know, on the education front right now, but what are some of the reasons that you hear from nurses that you know about why they're choosing to retire or leave the field?
I think a lot of it is just the fact that, again, we go back to that burnout stage. The level of care that they're providing is very, very high. And those staffing ratios have not been adjusted to account for that. They're working 12, 14 hour shifts. Even my educators are teaching overloads in their, you know, their contracts because we just don't have enough. And that takes a toll on everybody.
Kelly, how has the nursing shortage affected you and your coworkers in your daily work routine? What can you share with us about what it's like to work when there's just not enough people?
Sure. So I think that, staffing being an issue across all, like everywhere you go, the grocery store, a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of invite people, if they've never been a patient in a hospital, to kind of think about what it's like if you go to a short-staffed hospital or a short-staffed restaurant and you're going to wait longer for a table, you're going to wait longer for your food might be cold when it gets to you, that kind of thing. And now if you transfer that to a hospital where there aren't enough nurses and ancillary staff to answer your call light in a convenient and safe amount of time. Take the time to address your questions and concerns and really set sort of a course for your day. What is today going to look like in my journey to getting better and progressing my plan of care? And I think so often that the biggest struggle is that I can show up to work and if we're short staffed, my patients might be okay at the end of the shift, but they're not better. And that's ultimately what my goal is to progress their plan of care and get them back to their baseline level of health and functioning so that they can do what the ultimate goal is get home, whatever that looks like, to their families and be well again.
And what about the interactions between fellow nurses, Kelly? What is that like when you're starting a shift and you know that you're short-staffed?
You know, the thing I love about nurses is that we are a like motivated and supportive group of people. And it is kind of like, we're all in this together. And I think truly nurses being who they are at their heart is the reason so many of us have stayed. I don't stay at my job because I have a high level of devotion to like where I work. It's because of the people I work with that makes where I work so great. And I like, we're just kind of all in this together, and let me know what I can do for you and the vice versa. But it just kind of is everyone in survival mode day to day instead of really being able to thrive.
I was recently hospitalized. Some people may know a month ago, I was in Washington, D.C. I fell on a sidewalk and I broke two bones in my elbow and dislocated another bone in my forearm and had to have surgery. So I was hospitalized for 3 days. And the interactions with the nurses I had, you know, it definitely left an impression on me. And one story I've been sharing with people, when it was time for me to be discharged, well, one of the nurses who had been taking care of me, you know, I asked, like, you know, what time do you think I'll be able to leave? I need to call my aunt to come pick me up. And she's like, okay, I have your paperwork, but I have not eaten lunch. And so if you could just wait like 20 minutes, then I can help you. And it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that just really stuck with me because many of them talked about, I would ask like, how many other patients are you taking care of during a shift? And you could really, you know, just see the toll that it takes on them because they do want to be available and be helpful. And I think I just sensed a lot of sadness among a lot of the nurses.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's not often that nurses are able to like say to a patient, like trust that they can say, you know what, I'm happy to help you with that. Can I just go eat, or can I just go use the restroom really quick and I'll be right back? Very often it's this self-sacrifice that's been expected of us. And I think has gotten to the point where nurses can't continue to do that and function in that way anymore at work. Certainly nobody wants to ask a patient to wait for anything. We are there to help. We are there to care as quickly as we can. And I can imagine even some of those nurses hesitated to answer your question about,
oh, I felt terrible.
They were taking care of at a time.
Yeah, and I thought about that. I was on an orthopedic floor, so everybody on that floor had broken bones. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. Laura, if we are seeing a shortage of nurses on all levels, what does that mean for our healthcare systems and just the quality of our care?
Well, that is my biggest concern. And I tend to, as a dean, I tend to look at systems. And this system is broken. We have inequities that are happening in our healthcare system, and nurses are at the center of the care for our, both on the inpatient side, but on the outpatient and the community side too. And we can make a significant difference in the level of care and wellness that are happening in our communities. So if we're short, and, you know, it definitely impacts the, you know, when somebody's acutely ill, but it's also really impacting the wellness of our communities. Nurses have the ability to work in so many different areas and use their caring, their knowledge, their expertise in levels that people don't think about. We can do so much, and our students do so much in the communities to try and really increase the level of care and equitable access to what our communities need. So if we're short, it's not only impacting the acute care side, it's also impacting our communities.
Over the weekend, Laura, the Star Tribune reported some stats from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, and their data shows that nursing vacancies doubled from 2,450 in the year 2019 to 5,587 in 2020. And that left 8% of jobs unfilled. And so, I mean, we've got to turn it around, and just, you have to just wonder, like, is there a sense of urgency to do something about this?
Well, there is a sense of urgency, and those stats are very similar to the education side as well. Mm-hmm. We've got 6 to 8% vacancies across the country to try and fill for qualified nurse educators. So, you know, in order to impact this, one of the things I really want to advocate for today is the fact that nurses are both amazing caregivers, but they also are scientists. They're also mm-hmm. informaticists. They're also educators. They're primary care practitioners. There's so many things that you can do with an advanced education in nursing. And I think, in my opinion, nurses need to be in the car driving change, policy change. We need to be there. We may not be the driver, but we've got to be in the car. Mm-hmm. And I feel a very large sense of urgency around the fact that we need to be at that decision table. We can offer solutions. We can offer ideas. That's what we do all day. We problem solve. We prioritize. Mm-hmm. We critically think through situations, and all of those talents transition to really solving this huge system failure that we have now. So my big advocacy is for us to be at that table.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the state of nursing, and I want to take your phone calls. What are you thinking about this? Are you a nurse in Minnesota? What parts of your job do you love, and what's not so great? And how has your job changed over the years? And if you've been to a hospital recently or to a clinic, how did a nurse impact your care? Tell us your stories. The phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Also, you can leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Laura, you're the Dean of Nursing in the School of Health at St. Catherine University. St. Kate's long has had a reputation of having a great nursing program. Tell us about the many different kinds of nursing that are available there, the specialties, because when you sure. say someone's a nurse, that can mean many different things. What are people yes. specializing in?
So what St. Kate's, you know, we've been doing this for over 100 years, and our vision, our mission is to lead and to influence. And what we've done is really broadened an array of programming that will take a student all the way from a certified nursing assistant all the way to a doctor of nursing practice. In between there, we've got specialties in nursing informatics, which really deals with technology and data around improved quality and health. We've got a nurse educator program, which, by the way, we have funding for some of our students through the federal government about loan forgiveness, so they can enter the education arena. We have three different tracks for nurse practitioners. We have adult gerontology, we have pediatrics, and we've just started a psych mental health post certificate. And then we have our doctor of nursing practice, which really is that final step in leading and influencing change in our healthcare systems. So we've got a continuous pipeline. There's certainly other specialties out there that we are considering at this point. Nursing executive is one. We are very short of nursing leaders at this point, so we are looking at that as well. But St. Catherine really provides that whole scope of nursing preparation, both at the undergraduate, the certification, and the graduate level.
And I'm curious, you know, what type of people do you see going into nursing? Tell me about your students, Laura.
The students, the very, very, very positive things is that our students are becoming more diverse. We're beginning to approach really representation of what our communities look like. And that is a very strong focus of St. Kate's. But our nursing students come in motivated. They come in passionate to really learn how to holistically take care of patients, their families, the communities, and they're exceptionally brilliant with sciences and math, because nursing is not just an art, it's a science. Mm-hmm. So that preparation needs to happen in our bench sciences as far as chemistry, biology, mathematics, etc. So they're very motivated. They've either had normally some sort of experience of their own or a legacy of nurses in their family, or they know from a very, very early age that that's what they want to do.
It's a calling for many people. They'll
describe
it.
It is a calling. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And that happened with me. It happened with a lot of people. You know, and you can, at this point in time, you can take nursing in so many different directions. I've got wonderful friends who are nursing entrepreneurs, and really, you know, doing things very unusual and beneficial for our global communities and our communities here in the state.
Mm. All right. Well, as we talk about the state of nursing with two guests, we're starting to get some phone calls from our listeners. So let's take some of those phone calls. I'm asking, are you a nurse? Have you recently been hospitalized and cared for by a nurse? Tell us what you're seeing in this very special field. The number to call is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. To the phone lines in Minneapolis, Kimberly's on the phone. Good morning, Kimberly. And what did you want to share with us?
Good morning. Well, first of all, I'm a graduate of St. Kate's. I got my BSN from there. and I have a master's degree from another university, but I'm proud to be from St. Kate's. And I've been a nurse in Minneapolis for 17 years. And I was a second career nurse. I became a nurse at 38 years old. So my daughter is in nursing school right now. So supporting her through that. It's a challenge to get through that program.
So Kimberly, what do you want the public to know about your job and this career choice that your daughter has made?
I just want you to know that, you know, when you were when the other nurse was talking about not getting a lunch or saying I haven't had lunch, I mean, we've absolutely have those experiences regularly. I remember once when I was working in the pediatric unit with some young parents, and they were sort of lower intellectual functioning, but very devoted to their baby. And I said, oh, would you like some linens and stuff to wash your baby up, give her a bath? And they said to me, we don't know how. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, well, I could eat lunch, and it's already 2 p.m. at this point, or I could teach these parents how to give their baby a bath. Mm-hmm. And so I taught those parents how to give their baby a bath, and I didn't eat that day. But that was my choice. But it was the choice that I felt was important, you know, for those, that family. So nurses make those choices all the time.
Kimberly,
and tired.
What led your daughter to choose nursing? Clearly she's listening to you and watching you.
Well, I think she also feels very called to serve people. You know, I didn't feel called to be a nurse right away. I sort of got into it later. Inadvertently almost, but I do love it. I love being a nurse. I think my daughter has watched me over the years, and she respects what the work that I do. She works as a healthcare assistant at the same hospital, one of the hospitals I work. And so she's had those opportunities to be in the healthcare setting and really see the work that nurses do. And I think that sometimes people don't understand that nurses are an entirely different way of serving patients. We're not just assistants to the doctors. We have an entirely different approach to how we care for patients.
Right.
We're not medical, we're nurses. So it's holistic. It's what are all the needs of this patient, and how do we coordinate the different things that they need to get well and
yes.
have the best outcome today.
I recently had you know, nurses who held my hand while I cried, right? So it is holistic. Thank you, Kimberly. Let's take another phone call in Bloomington. Linnell is on the line. Good morning, Linnell. What did you want to tell us?
Good morning, Angela. Thanks so much for doing this program on nursing. It's so needed for people to really understand what we all put in. I'm a nurse, 48 years. I've held my license. I'm 72. I'm still working full-time.
All right,
I'm one of those entrepreneurial nurses.
Okay.
I have my own practice, and I'm helping people with their health rather than their sickness or illness. But more importantly, I was the nurse on the picket lines in 1985, leading the nurses at Methodist Hospital when we were on strike for over 3 weeks. And the issues were the same. Understaffed, underappreciated, Nothing has changed in over 35 years, and I think it's really sad that nurses are still having to go through all of these issues.
Thank you, yeah. Linnell. That's hard to hear. Kelly, when you hear that, hear Linnell, you know, say this, 35 years, nothing has changed. What do you think when you hear her say that?
You know, I was nodding along as she was saying that, because I think the understaffed, underpaid, underappreciated, and it blows my mind that what people see as such a trusted and essential part of the healthcare system continues to endure this sort of treatment in a way. And I just kind of wonder would it be different if it weren't a female dominated profession? Would we be taken more seriously as professionals? Would our concerns about our workplace and patient care conditions be heard differently and would we still be having these same struggles 35 years later if it weren't a female dominated profession? I think the same could be said for like the education and nursing education too.
The impact. And Laura, anything that you would add to that?
Yeah, I understand the whole repeating issue, and that is why we have got to really focus on at a system level. Otherwise, this is going to keep repeating itself. St. Kate's is all about, you know, elevating women to lead and influence. We need leaders in nursing. We need strong leaders and creative leaders to sit at those tables and help make these decisions around our entire healthcare system, not just for nursing, but access and diversity. We need to be at that table to help with this. Otherwise, this pattern is going to keep repeating itself.
Let's take another phone call from a listener before we go to a news break. In Faribault, Maureen is on the phone. Maureen, thank you for waiting. And what did you want to tell us about nursing?
Hi. I've been a nurse for 42 years, and most of it was bedside. I worked a lot at the University of Minnesota. But I moved to Faribault, and now I'm doing hospice. But what I see is that kids come into nursing, and they can't handle it. We're understaffed all the time, and they are getting out of it as fast as possible. They're going back to school. And I think that, you know, conditions need to change so that they don't feel that need to leave, because then you're stuck all the time with new people that don't know what they're doing, and there's not enough older nurses left to provide the education. And I wish there wasn't such an emphasis on moving up the ladder in nursing. I wish there was more emphasis on doing good bedside nursing.
Maureen, let me ask Laura about that. Are you seeing that many new nurses are spending fewer years working in hospitals and clinics and trying to advance and moving to management more quickly than they have in years past, Laura?
I think so. We see a higher exit rate of nurses with 1 to 5 years experience. What we're doing on the education side is we're one of only a handful of programs that's holistically certified. So in other words, we're teaching nurses to take care of you know, patients in a holistic manner, but we're also teaching them resiliency and the tools to take care of themselves. And I think that's part of where we're falling short around that resiliency, is we've got to give them the tools to do that before. The other thing I will say is I think that, you know, we see a lot of bonuses out there for starting new places, etc. I tend to flip the system and say let's give the retention bonuses to keep nurses at the bedside, to keep them really expanding their practice by still delivering direct care. I think that there's ways to do that, but again, the students coming in, there is a change a little bit in the level of persistence and the level of the availability to care for themselves in a way that is going to help them to stay in the field, because resiliency is one of the big pieces of being a nurse. When it doesn't go right, then you go left. You're constantly critically thinking to do that, and it can be physically and emotionally exhausting. And if we don't take care of our students right now and teach them how to navigate that, and teach them how to care for themselves too, they're going to go into the environment and basically say, what the heck, right?
Right. You know, before we go to news, I want to read a couple of comments we're getting on Twitter as we talk about the state of nursing. Jim writes, my wife is a nurse. She is sleeping right now. Another 12-night shift with no bathroom or food breaks where she's dealing with 10-hour emergency room waits without any security staff and open beds. She suffers from empathy, burnout, and exhaustion. Lisa writes, I retired from nursing early to escape a toxic workplace. On average day, we worked in barely contained chaos. We got through every shift together as a team, which kept me there as long as it did, but administrators don't seem to have a clue and are not willing to listen. And then one more comment here from Janet writes, as a long-term nurse and nurse practitioner, I see a lot of my peers choosing early retirement because it has just become too difficult to fight the forces. Back to the phone lines in Little Canada. Brian is on the phone. Hey, Brian, what did you want to share with us about nurses?
Hi. Last April in 2022, I was admitted to Unity Hospital for 4 days, and they were so short-staffed on nursing. I was very ill. And while they were able to do all the critical things, like give me my medications and everything on time, I was so ill, I didn't realize until about my third day there that they didn't have enough nursing staff to change me into a hospital gown or anything like that. And the whole entire 4.5 days I was there, I was in my street clothes the whole time. And normally during a hospital stay, they change you into a gown. And when I realized that on about my third day, they apologized to me and said, well, we're short-staffed and we're just concentrating on, you know, doing the critical stuff, the necessary stuff we need to do, like give you your medications and come in and take your, you know, blood pressure and look at your heart rate and do whatever nurses do, the important stuff. And I was just a little shocked that they were that short-staffed. I was happy that they were doing the important stuff.
Yeah, wow. So it sounds like you have a lot of sympathy, like you've seen it firsthand what it's like to have a labor shortage in that industry.
Yeah, and I was a little bit not happy that, you know, they couldn't do all the care for me, but I was sympathetic. They were, you know, all the nurses were really nice to me and everything, but the patient load they had was more than they could handle, and they were concentrating on doing the very most important things for every patient is kind of what they said to me.
Thank you, Brian, there in Little Canada. Sorry you had to be hospitalized. Kelly, what do you make of what Brian just shared there?
Well, I'm so sorry that was his experience, and I appreciate his empathy towards his caregivers. And he's exactly right in that is where the focus goes when there aren't enough nurses and support staff to do the work, is getting the medications, getting, you know, like responding to changes in a patient's condition, focusing on what needs to happen so that they can be discharged. And those, what seem like little things, but are actually ultimately really big things in what people remember about the hospital, their hospital stay, don't get to happen. I mean, in a perfectly well-staffed unit, Brian would have had a fresh hospital gown at least once a day and fresh sheets every day and had a chance to wash up. And that didn't get to happen for him is truly a failure of the system that nurses are now having to perform in. And I just, like, my heart breaks that his experience is not unique. It could have happened at any hospital in Minnesota.
Kelly, you are an intensive care unit nurse. Can you give us a realistic picture of what you do as a nurse day to day? You know, I used to be a huge fan of Grey's Anatomy. I've watched a lot of portrayal of the hospital, you know, scene behind the scenes and the relationships, but it's not what we see in the movies, right?
Right. It's funny you bring up Grey's Anatomy because I stopped watching. Of course. And the storyline's great, but I stopped watching that show in the first season when I saw the doctors walking a patient down the hall because
that would never happen.
No, that's what the nurses do. That's, you know, that's part of our work. And yeah, so like my day in the ICU, I come in and I take my patient assignment from the charge nurse on the shift before. And it's generally a two patients that I take care of. And I sit down, I look at their heart rhythms on the monitor. I get report from the nurse going off shift and start to plan my day. In a perfect world, I get to go in and introduce myself to them as the person taking care of them that day and kind of work with them on what their concerns are and what my concerns are and what we're going to do together to address them, what we want to talk to the doctor about that day, and then work together. Now, it being intensive care, my patients are not always conscious and able to carry on that conversation with me, but
you're their reality, you're their advocate in the room for those who can't talk, right?
Yes. So if they can't talk, if they can't tell me what's wrong, it's my job to sort of sleuth that out and assess them head to toe every 2 hours, making sure that I'm not missing any changes in their condition that are happening, those slight nuances that can really make or break for a patient, and letting the right doctor know if they have multiple different doctors on their case, letting the right specialty know that they that there's been a change in condition and what my concerns are.
And then I'm curious, when you leave and then come back the next day, are your patients still on your mind sometimes?
Oh, yes, always. And like you leave sometimes wondering if you'll come back and see them the next day, or if will they be better and out of ICU, or will they be not better and in the morgue even. And like, yeah, I don't, just because I've punched out doesn't mean that I have punched out like mentally and emotionally from my patients.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No. Oh,
I was just going to say, I don't think there's a nurse listening who hasn't done that thing where they've called the unit later to be like, oh, I forgot to tell you this, but please do this for Bob in room 12 or whatever. We don't check out just because we're clocked out.
That makes sense to me. In Roseville, let's talk with another one of our listeners. John is on the phone. Good morning, John. Are you a nurse?
I am a nurse.
Okay. And what did you want to add to this conversation?
Well, I guess, you know, a myriad of things have gone through my mind listening to this all. You know, I'm hearing everything that, of course, we all deal with. However, what I want to talk about more than anything is our larger and longer issue of healthcare professionals. We baby boomers, I am a baby boomer, are going to need more and more healthcare. And as the talk goes on here on the radio, there are fewer and fewer resources to draw from. And for decades I've been thinking about this, about, okay, well, where are we going to get those folks? And all I can think of is somehow two things have to happen. One, we have to have some type of impetus to get people to do this, i.e., some type of scholarship grant type of situation on the federal level, not just on the state level. You think around the world and what particular countries are available to draw from their population that may want to come to the United States and be nurses and take care of we old folks. That's one thing. And I think we really need to kind of concentrate on that from a nursing standpoint. Now, I'm in an interesting situation on the second note. I have a brother who is an economist, does research on the federal level in the Medicare game. And he always has interesting conversations, deals with very interesting people, deals with the federal legislature and stuff like that. He works about five blocks from the United States Capitol, has people coming into his office, lobbyists, CEOs, like I said, representatives, senators, had some representatives from Hillary Clinton way back when he was trying to do some universal health care during the Clinton administration. At any rate, my point is, you know, I was lamenting my situation on the on a very micro level in his consideration, that on a day-to-day basis we do this and we do that and we don't have any support. And he says, yep, I see that, but you got to understand what the CEOs are doing. They're not dealing with what you're dealing with. They're dealing with the business at hand and trying to create a situation that's sellable to an insurance company, to whoever is going to pay them the best dollar for what we offer.
Well, John, I want to talk to our guests and take some more phone calls, but thank you for calling in. John is a nurse. And Laura, I want to ask you about this. A recent survey from the American Association of Colleges of Nursing found only 9% of registered nurses nationwide are men. So as we look at the recruitment effort and trying to get more people to go into the field of nursing, but also finding more nursing educators to train them, what do we know about men and male nurses? Are we seeing some progress there?
We definitely are. We've gone from the 3 to 4%, and we're almost over 10% male now. It's certainly, again, diversifying and representing our patient makeup, right? In color, ethnicity, gender. But I want to say one thing about the caller's point about scholarship. And I think that is one of the key issues that we need to focus on is scholarships for students who want to go into nursing.
We've talked about college loans and student debt. Yep. And so if this is critical, then we have to help people pay for it.
Absolutely. And I think you will see those that have the passion to be nurses come into the field because there's not financial barriers. We have a lot of first generation nursing students at St. Kate's. It is the biggest barrier is financial. And I think we need to address that both for educators and for our students coming into the field.
Let's take another phone call in Bemidji. Ashley's on the phone. Hello, Ashley.
Hello, Angela. Thank you for taking my call and for having this important conversation. One of the things that I think is important for, you know, Minnesotans to recognize is that eyes are on Minnesota. If you paid any attention to the M&A strike recently, you know that nurses in Minnesota do stand up for the work that we do with our patients and our communities. Something that we're trying to do a little bit different where I'm working as an educator at Northwest Technical College in Bemidji is we are working to have a more online asynchronous theory portion of our nursing program so that our students who need to work full-time, because that's a big concern for many of our students, is that they just cannot afford to be full-time students and become nurses. So they take their theory courses online, and then they come to Bemidji for several days at a time to do their laboratory and clinical work. And we have to do some of that because we just don't have enough nursing faculty to kind of run a 24-hour a day kind of operation. And one of the things that I think it's important for all of the nurses who are listening and the public to understand is that, you know, even if we give scholarships to all of these people who want to become nurses, even if we create enough jobs or even good paying jobs, if there are not enough nursing faculty who are qualified to teach those students, we cannot train them. The World Health Organization, American Nurses Association, even the Minnesota Board of Nurses has recognized that the shortage of nursing faculty is a critical component to why we aren't able to reduce the nursing shortage. And so when we think about this from a legislative perspective and a government response perspective, if we are not supporting the work of nursing educators, we can't get more of them. And if you look out into clinical practice, and I'm sure your guests will agree that as a professional nurse, I know that I can make more money in a leadership position in corporate industry. I choose education because I value the commitment and the work that I do for my community and my state to train nurses. But the money is what's driving a lot of people to consider nursing role outside of education, and the education community just cannot compete with corporate industry and those high-paying jobs that you're seeing.
Thank you. That's Ashley calling in from Bemidji. Thank you, Ashley. Let's take another phone call in Woodbury. Pamela is on the phone. Pamela, thank you for waiting. And what did you want to tell us about nursing?
Good morning, Angela.
Hi.
I started my nursing career like one of your speakers, taking care of two people in intensive care. I've done everything from dialysis to hospice to faith nursing. I'm now finishing up my career in step-down rehab units that take people from the hospitals. I say that I do 8 hours of speed walking and 1 to 2 hours of charting, right? Mm-hmm. And as your speakers have said, I take a half an hour lunch out of my 10-hour day, and oftentimes that half an hour lunch, I sit instead of going to the bathroom, right? So we're talking about, I love my career, but I am, as one of your previous callers, 70 years old, I'm incredibly in shape. Most women, after 20, 30 years in the field, can't do this kind of physical activity, right? Because you gain a little weight, your knees are hurting, and so we lose so many young nurses who come to us because they have spent years doing prereqs. If they can go to a wonderful school like St. Catharines, but that costs a fortune, mm-hmm. or if they go to a lovely community college, which is cheaper, but a lot of that training is online, and they are barely, barely qualified to even come onto our floor. So many of them stay, and they say, this is crazy.
Well, Pamela, I don't want to interrupt you, but we have a minute left here. And Kelly, I would love it if you could kind of speak about our next generation of nurses and people who are new to the field and pursuing it. What would you say to them, Kelly, about why they should continue pursuing what is their passion?
You know, I think the reason that I have been able to stay in my nursing career for the past 14 years is because of the wonderful people I work with and the satisfaction that being with them every day brings me. And so I would say to new nurses coming in, find that group of people who can lift you up and help hold you together on those really tough shifts, on those really hard days. Find ways to take care of yourself. Find a therapist. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't still be a nurse. I wouldn't be here talking to you today about nursing if I didn't think that there was hope that we could turn the ship,
Kelly,
we can make it better.
Our time is up, but thank you for the work you are doing and have done for so long. Thank you to all of our nurses for taking care of us. We've been talking with Kelly Annas, who is a registered nurse here in the Twin Cities, as well as Laura Thero, the Dean of Nursing and the School of Health at St. Catherine University in St. Paul. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you to all of our listeners who called in. Today's conversation was produced by Matt Alvarez. We'll talk again tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.